Hello and welcome to an episode of Everything is Canon, the Cinemas podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@cinelinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at stevedunk5 or at everythingcanon. Today in the show, I'm talking to Dahlia Adler all about her brand new book, Cool for the Summer, which is described as a story of self-discovery and new love. It's about the things we want and the things we need, and it's about the people who will let us be who we are. While that brief summary is nice and all, Cool for the Summer goes much deeper than that and immerses you in what will probably be the greatest summer of your life. And rather than epic or grand gestures, Dahlia lures you in with a series of small but meaningful gestures of kindness, reassurances from a loving hand on her skin, of soft-spoken secrets, and offers of comfort. Because Dahlia has impeccable taste and is the mastermind behind LGBTQReads.com, we talk about some of the great books she's read this year or is looking forward to reading, why Grease isn't a great comparison, Cool for the Summer, of course, and much, much more. While this is a spoiler-free discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now, but please double back after you've read it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As always, you know, around these parts, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves. Each time we either engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, something we might all be doing very soon, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices, and this should be done all year, of course. I've mentioned this before as well, but since they're still looking for mentors, I'd like to mention it again. There's a new nonprofit organization that was announced recently, Diverse Voices, Inc., whose mission is to empower and advocate for minority, underrepresented, and other marginalized groups of writers, illustrators, and other book creators. This is the brainchild of literary agent Beth Vallon, who is the founder of DVCon as well. You've probably heard of that. So please go to diversevoicesinc.org to find out more and how you can help. It would all be greatly appreciated, I'm sure. Okay, Dahlia Adler is a fucking superhero as far as I'm concerned. There's no other way to put it. She's an editor. She's an editor of mathematics by day. I'm just reading some of this, but she's an editor of mathematics by day, the overlord of LGBTQReads.com by night, and an author, editor of young adult and new adult books every spare moment in between. She's also a mom, a wife, and deals with all the bullshit of being a human woman in this life. She's authored so many things I don't even know. Just go to DahliaDaily.com and you'll see what I mean. She is the mad genius, though, behind LGBTQReads.com, which is a very comprehensive site dedicated to promoting curated LGBTQIAP+ literature for all ages. It's a website I frequently visit for recommendations and to add to my unbearingly long TBR list, because Dahlia has impeccable taste. Speaking of that, she is here today to talk about her new book, Cool for the Summer, which is described as a story of self-discovery and new love. It's about the things we want and the things we need, and it's about the people who will let us be who we are. Kind of a generic bit of promotional language there.
But yeah, I didn't write that. No. I usually call it buy YA Grease with better life choices.
Oh, that's so okay. Yeah. I want to mention actually Grease in a second, but In my review, I said concerning the summer love aspect of this book, speaking of Grease, these are the book's finest moments as we are immersed in what will probably be the greatest summer of Lara's life, of either of their lives. Heck, it's probably the greatest summer of my life. And don't look for epic. This isn't that. Instead, look for a series of small but meaningful gestures of kindness, reassurances from a loving hand on our skin or soft-spoken secrets, and offers of comfort. I'm very stoked she's here because I absolutely love this book. I gave it 5 out of 5 stars on Goodreads, which I don't even know what that means anymore because apparently 4 is not very good anymore. But we're not talking about that, though. Please welcome to the show, Dahlia Adler. Hi, Dahlia.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. So you kind of get a sense how this is going to go already, I think. It's a little loosey-goosey, but that's the way we like it. As always, because our baseline now of anything is the pandemic, I just want to say that I hope you, your friends, and family are all safe or have been safe and healthy during the last year and change now.
Yes, thankfully. And I am currently very grateful to be in the phase of that 2 weeks post-second shot. Oh. So, yes.
You've had 2
I'm in
shots.
A very lucky place. Yeah, New York is really a very, very lucky state to be in at this point. So I am almost at the fully vaccinated point. My parents are, my in-laws are, my siblings are. We have been extremely lucky. And that's, you know, no small thing for somebody who had a baby during the pandemic, as I did last summer.
Wow. Okay.
So very grateful for anything that goes smoothly.
I knew you had a child. I didn't realize it was that during the pandemic.
And I have two, but that's
your second.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
In fairness, your governor does need a win. So if he can't tell him to keep his hands off other things and on vaccines and we'll be okay.
Please. And maybe we can kick some more to other countries because this is
kick some to mine. I'm in Canada. I haven't had one yet.
God, I'm sorry. Yeah. So I work with Canadians. Part of this math editor thing is I work closely with some Canadians.
Okay.
And every time they tell me what's going on there with vaccines, I am so angry for you. It's unreal. So,
we got off to a bad start. You know, obviously our case count isn't anywhere near, you know, yours is obviously, and that's just by population and some other reasons as well. But no, we got off to a bad start. We're slowly getting better. You know, it's frustrating for sure. Especially, you know, I was just at the hospital last week for, had to go for a little quick emergency thing there fine. Oh, I'm fine. But
good.
And,
I hope.
It's a really gross story. I won't gross you out with it, but, it was involving an infected cyst. I'll just say that.
Okay.
There was drainage.
Right. Well, I'm glad that's all better now, but it's a nerve-wracking place to be.
It is. And what was frustrating was, you know, just talking, I like to, you know, I'm a nervous talker. So talking to all the nurses and everybody, and they've only had one vaccine so far. These nurses in a hospital, in eMERGE, like as frontline as it gets. And granted, our cases aren't crazy, but
it's still that's
So I'm just like, and I'm fine. Like I'm 45. I mostly work from home. Like I'm a recluse non-pandemic. Right. So I'm a shut in.
I mean,
so
same.
It hasn't crapped my style that much. So like, I'll gladly give both of mine up to, you know, nurses, anyone else who needs it way more than I do, but it's been slow going, but I don't know. I'm not one to go too hard on our healthcare system because it's served me well in my life anyways.
Yes.
So
I'll go hard on ours. That's okay.
I'm happy for you and everyone down there and all my friends in the States though, because you know, it's
it's nice for us to have a win in healthcare finally.
Absolutely. Totally.
That's that at least, I guess.
Totally agree. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that everybody's doing well. How was birthing during the pandemic? Like, how was it? Because, like, you know, I know friends that have that had a child up here last year, and you know, there was some, you know, like the father wasn't allowed in the room for some of it. And
so that was the original plan. They made that law for a while, and this is one where I actually love Cuomo, which is he had that struck down as illegal, like as quickly as possible, barring partners from the emergency room. So we were allowed to have one.
Right.
But I don't use doulas or midwives or anything. So I was just like, okay, I get to have my husband. That's great. A little sad to go to, he was not allowed at any appointments. So it's a little sad to do all the ultrasounds and everything by yourself and kind of just report back after them. And I don't have a driver's license actually. And my doctor is like 45 minutes away. So he would just have to drive me to these appointments. I'd go in by myself and then kind of just come back out and tell him about them while he drove around Manhattan looking for parking for an hour.
Oh,
like that was the experience of it. So that was really sad, but I feel really lucky that I got to have him in the room with me a few months earlier, I wouldn't have been able to have him in the room with me. So I was really nervous about delivering in a mask. I am very pleased to report that was not a big deal.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
They made you wear a mask, eh? That's an interesting call, isn't it? Because I mean, I assume if you had expressed any breathing difficulties at all, they would have said, you know, take that fucking thing off. Right.
Well, they test you for COVID, so they know you don't have it,
general breathing problem. I mean, like, I've never given birth myself. I assume breathing is an important part of it. I mean,
it is. It is pretty relevant.
Movies. I know. I watch movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Comes up.
Okay. But you didn't have any problems. So that's good. So I'm
no, thankfully that was all okay.
Awesome. What a weird, you know, it's always, right. Like obviously you didn't plan for it. Just like book releases, you know, you can't plan for these things, but
you know, I did plan for the pregnancy to be clear.
Okay. Just, well, I mean, but you know,
just not for a pandemic. But
that's what I meant.
Time.
Sorry. I meant, yeah, outside.
No, I know what you meant. I'm just kidding.
She was an accident.
But yeah, no, look, it's
going to be interesting. Like, you know, it's something, you know, these children can, you know, they, yeah. It's a little bit of a brag, you know, I was born during a pandemic.
Yeah.
What did you do? You know, like, yeah, yeah. It's going to be a funny thing years from now.
It's true. Certainly nobody planned. I mean, this is I released another anthology in 2019, but I haven't released a novel since 2016 and a YA novel since 2015. Like, right. What I have chosen to have my like comeback to YA be during a pandemic, I certainly would not have. And two books 2 months apart is definitely a challenge. And
Well, that's in, you know, and I talked to, you know, obviously this is what I do. I talk to authors and talked to many of the past, you know, year and a bit. And it's, I don't know what's worse, either the authors who know better, meaning they've released a book outside of the pandemic, or the debut authors who don't know any different.
Debut authors. Yeah, I gotta say, I feel for them so deeply. Just the idea that they've never had an in-person launch party. They've never seen their books on shelves in the store. I mean, that's brutal. That was such a huge part of debuting. Right. And my first book was so small, really small publisher, but I at least got to go to Barnes & Noble and sit. I'd like... have a really distinct memory of going to Barnes & Noble the day that I heard my book was on shelves, which was actually a little bit early. And I sat on the floor and I stared at it and I cried and it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I had that experience and I feel terrible for these authors who are being denied that.
That is an important moment. Yeah. And I always tell the debut ones, like one of the things at, for me, which I always get a kick out of, I'm a big convention guy. I like conventions and festivals. And And I love seeing authors. I love seeing the lineups and the throngs of people, you know, telling you how great you are and how your books and how your books change them and affect their life in this way or that way. I just think that's great. I love seeing that. You know, I love. I'm not super crazy about it myself, just because I get a bit of anxiety. But I love seeing other people meet people they admire or their heroes or whatever. And I love that for authors, seeing that long line of people tell them how great they are, because you deserve it because you work so fucking hard. Well, you work hard. God damn it. You guys work hard on these things and you put yourself into them so much. And
that we do.
And the accolades got to be there, and it's just not there. But I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be, and you look at some of the huge books that have come out this past year.
Yeah.
Just like crazy.
It's pretty wild.
Anyways, that's depressing.
No, I do miss those conferences and festivals and things. I didn't go to them that often, but when I do, I find it very restorative. It's like finally getting to meet your coworkers and talk about the business in person, and there's just kind of nothing like it. I do really miss that. I haven't seen an author friend in person in over a year, which is rough.
I'm rarely happier than on a convention floor, and
so good.
It's going to be interesting to see. I know, like, New York Comic Con is doing apparently they're doing a in person and virtual, and I'm just like I don't know if I'm ready for that, but
I'm not ready for anything.
You know, like Brooklyn Book Festival is hasn't made any official announcements yet, but they've got the dates saved, and so I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of still scares me, so I'm not sure what I'm going to do, especially if I'm still not vaccinated by then.
Yeah, but, lucky for me, I'm not invited to any of that stuff.
You should be, goddammit.
I did get my first invite to, it was to moderate a launch. I had to say no, just because I've found I cannot do things that coincide with my children's bedtime.
Right. Yeah.
Like, if I'm going to make an exception, it's going to be for my own launch, and that's it, because it is really just impossible to do. But it was the first time that I was offered the option to do it virtually or to come into the store.
Okay.
And that was for something on June 1st. So I'm like, okay, so that's where people feel like it can be a little more open. And I mean, again, that's in New York City, where a lot of people are vaccinated.
Right. Well, this was always going to be the awkward time, right? The transition, the transition. And there are people that are going to mask up forever. And there's people that have already burnt them. And and there'll be that big chunk of people in the middle, that the ones we're going to have to keep an eye on. But this is going to be, this year is going to be such a bellwether, right? Going forward for things like, I also love going to, you know, concerts, live music. And I assume that'll be the last thing to come back. But
There's some people doing it. I don't know how, but
I'm not ready. Not ready. Anyway.
Yeah, those are probably not the bands you want to see.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not a big Toby Keith guy. Okay, I admit it. But it was just, I've talked so much about it last year, everyone, it's been fun just to talk to people about it and stuff. And what was your last concert? And it's like, oh my God. And I just started thinking about it. I'm like, is that my last concert? Am I never going to a concert again?
Oh, don't say that.
I know, but I read this article though, it was about how some bands are actually doing okay doing these virtual concerts. Like they're actually making money at it, and
good for them.
There's zero overhead, right? Because touring does cost a lot. And I'm like, let's not go down there.
And I guess you can still sell merch. So
that's right. Yeah. So I'm like, well, let's hope that doesn't continue. Anyways, safety is key. Absolutely. Yes. 100%. So let's just keep whatever we do, whatever it looks like, let's just be the safest as possible.
Yes.
So like I mentioned, you are the crazy person behind LGBTReads.com.
I am.
And you do it by yourself, essentially, I think, right?
Yes. I have over times hired assistants. So they come and they do formatting and stuff. But right. I have very neurotically insisted on doing all the content myself. I mean, I have guest posts and obviously a lot of what goes up as, you know, cover reveals and excerpt reveals and things like that.
Yeah.
But all the lists, anything with titles, that is all me.
How many hours a week?
A lot.
Yeah.
Like it's honestly kind of embarrassing because I have all these other things to do, and the other things pay, and this doesn't, and yet, like, I don't think that there are weeks. It's less than 5, and usually not less than 10 hours a week that goes into doing some things for the site. I had to put new submissions on hiatus for right now.
Right,
just because, like, I have a very small window to finish my summer 2022 book, which I'm doing revisions on now. And I have, you know, other things for, I have to promote Cool for the summer, and I have stories due for my next anthology June 15th. And they're already starting to come in. So it's just like, I got to take a break on something.
I do want to talk about At the Stroke of Midnight, but we'll get to that later. that author list is insane.
I'm very into it.
Yeah, I'll bet. it bums me out that that you don't get paid anything for that. And you know, it's, you don't have time to really, you probably could if you really tried, but it's hard these days because there's so much content out there and people are not willing to pay so much anymore for stuff like that, are they?
I mean, people do give some donations, and I also run a Patreon that brings in some money, but that's a ton more work for me. That's not, I actually did once have like this great sit down with Saritia Fennell, who is she is a genius. And she was advising me and basically told me, like, you just need ads is where money comes from. Like, don't charge people for blog posts.
Right.
And apparently I chose the wrong WordPress for ads. So you can book ads and sponsor posts through LGBTQ Reads. I don't charge a lot for them because it's not fantastic ad space.
Right.
And basically nobody buys ads, and I just keep an ad for my own book up there in the meantime.
Right.
So that's it. And so at one point I bought the right domain, and then I, you know, started to move things over and it didn't translate exactly right. And I just kind of gave up on it. But that's the thing, is I think it would get advertising if I had the platform for it, and I just don't. But the views are there. Like the last few months, the monthly views have jumped up to about 40,000 views a month.
Yep. It's an incredible, incredible resource. And anyone out there listening, like LGBTReads.com, I'm just going to keep saying it.
LGBTQ Reads. I know it's really difficult. I have a lot of regrets about the name. And I
know. No, it's fine. That's just me.
I do it all the time. No, I get it wrong all the time. And I'm like, this was a mistake. It should have just been like a word. It actually came out of a page that I had on my blog called Quilt Bag Compendium. And people complained about Quilt Bag so often, you know, which is LGBT, like, it's just rearranging, but in a much easier to memorize way,
right?
That I did LGBTQ instead, and even though it's less inclusive, and people don't really complain about the name, so I guess that's better. But it is harder to say and harder to remember and more easily typoed. And I really, like, I don't want to rebrand it. It's been 5 years.
No, don't
rebrand. But it was such a wrong naming move, and it's very frustrating.
Oh no, it's just me, and I'm also trying to say it too quickly as well.
No, it's
I'm dumb. Just say it. You can say it.
I will not say that. But I'm really glad that it's been a good resource for people. It's very gratifying to see.
It's an incredible resource, and I like I said, it wasn't, I'm a life is too short for bullshit person. I use it all the time. Actually, I've sent you an email before about help. If you need any help with it at all, I don't know if you know, 40-year-old cishet white men are the staff you're looking for.
No, so actually the problem is all of a sudden WordPress won't let new users access it. It's just not right. working. Like the password it creates for them doesn't work and I can't change it. So I haven't even been able to use assistance.
Right.
Except for one person who's as busy as I am. So she takes pity on me and does the graphics once a month. But for the most part, she can't really do this anymore either. And that's the problem is I can't even, the last few months, I haven't even been able to use an assistant.
Right.
Because I logistically, technologically cannot work it out. And that's why I had to stop. When I could forward emails to somebody and be like, you put in this cover reveal.
Yeah.
It was different. But I guess I'm a really big pain in the butt to work for because I've had a lot of assistants kind of ghost on me.
I got thick skin. I'm telling you, if you ever get it figured out, I'm even if you just need data entry, I'm just please.
Thank you. Yeah, that's all it is. It's all formatting. I mean, I think people get bored with not doing the content creation.
Oh, I don't care about that. No,
that's me.
I like being part of a team. It's the site I blog for now. It's the same idea, right? Everyone just chips in however they can.
Right.
It's 100% true. If ever you find yourself, and you need it, I'm officially volunteering my time. No problem.
Thank you.
You've given me way more, right? So I could never pay you back for all the great recommendations I've gotten from your site. So
I'm glad you have. That's all I need to know.
All right. That'll keep you going in a couple more years.
It will. It does make a big difference.
Speaking of Rex, I'm going to be recommending your book here in a minute. But what are you reading right now, or do you have time? What are you recommending?
I am reading right now. I am reading the upcoming Like Other Girls by Britta London, which is about a girl who joins the football team at her school when she's kind of kicked off the basketball team for being too violent, and she has to prove she can do team sports. And she's a very I'm not like other girls. I mean, she is a lesbian, but she is also just very I'm not like other girls. I'm so badass playing football. And then these other girls all try to join the team also.
Right.
She's like, no, I'm not like them. Stop lumping me with girls trying to join the team. And the whole thing is really an exploration of internalized misogyny. And it's done really well. But back in the day in YA, there was, and I mean, not that it's totally gone. There's so much internalized misogyny in YA that was not intentional. I keep flinching at this book and then remembering no, the author knows what she's doing. This is intentional. This is the point of the book.
Right.
But it's a little bit of a rough read in that way. But I don't want to say that aside. She's doing it right. I'm really enjoying the book. And my next book is about a female football player, also a lesbian. So I saved this book specifically until I was up to revision so it could be kind of inspiring.
Oh, nice.
But not too inspiring.
Not plagiarizing. Inspiring.
It's a very different plot.
There's a t-shirt there. Inspiring, not plagiarizing.
So that's, I'm really enjoying that.
Okay. Perfect. That's already on my list. Yeah.
All right. Good. Yep. And I don't read a lot of adult sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah.
And I probably won't end up finishing this one, but I did not anything about the book. Just it takes me a long time, and I have to read so much for blogging. But I am really enjoying The Unbroken by C.L. Clarke.
Oh, it's so good.
So good. good. That just came out at the end of March, and that's North African inspired sci-fi fantasy for adults.
Not to your degree, but similar. I'm very fortunate I get things early, and I read that one a while ago, and I read it again close to the release date just because it was one of those things where and then reread it again. It's so good. I was hoping more people were talking about it, but I think that was a busy release week too when it came out. There was something else huge that came, I can't remember, but it got lost a bit in the release that week, but
it might have a little, I think it might still be up as the new release spotlight on LGBTQ reads, but Aidan Thomas's new book I think came out that day and was a big deal.
Lost in the Neverwoods.
Aidan Thomas is fantastic. I haven't read that one yet. I did love Cemetery Boys very much.
Cemetery Boys is genius. Lost in the Neverwoods is it's Peter Pan, right? So I guess it probably really depends on what your viewpoint is on that and
yeah, so I'm not a big Peter Pan person, but neither I do want to read more Aidan Thomas, and I do want to read more Kayla Ankrum, and she has Darling coming out on June 22nd, and her, if you haven't read The Wicker Boys or The Weight of the Stars, she's just so brilliant and intense in this really terrifying, wonderful, marvelous way. So I'm really excited to read more by her too. So I wonder if this year will turn me into a Peter Pan person.
Yeah, it's the thing about Lost in the Neverwoods for me was because it's dark, it's and makes you uncomfortable, which in a good way.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and I'm hesitant to say this because I don't necessarily if I agree with this premise, but I almost wished it was maybe an adult book and not a YA book.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. You'll read it.
I'm curious what I'll think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like because sometimes it's like you just feel them sort of just I feel like sometimes authors just like restrain themselves just a little bit, but there's that darkness in them that you know that kind of wants to come out, but you know there's rules, right? So yeah, I don't know.
And not to make anybody hate me, but I am also beta reading. I hope I'm allowed to say this. Anna Marie McLemore's 2022 book.
Oh, are you?
I am. It's called Lake Lore. And I mean, I'm like two chapters in, but everything they write is wonderful. So.
Awesome. Amazing. I haven't cracked 2022 yet. I've got some in my inbox though. So I've just still got so much 21s to get to first.
Yes. Yeah. It's the only 2022 I'm reading right now.
Okay. Yeah. I've got a few sitting there, but I'm just like, no, not yet. The number looks weird to me too. 2022.
Yes. It's we're not there.
I started and finished in about 5 hours yesterday, Hanu and Ishu's Guide to Fake Dating.
That one is great. Yes.
It was sitting there for the longest time. I try and do things in order as I receive them, if I can, right? So I got this one late in the game. I don't remember why, but probably just because I forgot to ask for it. But I loved it. I'm a huge sap, number one. I love saccharin. Like, it's my favorite. And I love sentiment. And I love, you know, slow burn. Like, you know, just do it already.
I love when people who do not expect to click.
Yeah.
There's just something, so whether it's rivals to lovers or enemies to lovers or just, you know, polar opposites. There's just something about that I love.
And I love how I don't like furtive. You know what I mean? I like, we know where this is going from. I mean, you can look at the cover. you know, we know where this is going. And I like that. And it doesn't mean there isn't drama and that there isn't going to be stress. And all that wonderful stuff for sure, and conflict and all that stuff. But a good writer can still keep you intrigued, even if you know the ending, which you kind of like in not know the ending, but you don't know.
Right.
I mean.
No, you know, I mean, it's in a romance, you know, the ending, you want to know the ending. It's part of the beauty of romance as a genre.
Exactly. So Abita did such a great job, you know, just taking you through this journey with Hanu and Ishu. And just finished it last night. So I'm still like glowing from it. You know what I mean? I finished Made in Korea yesterday at lunch. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, should I start another book today? I'm like, yeah, I'll start this one. And I had no intention of finishing it, but I couldn't put it down.
I love that feeling.
Yeah. So I'm still glowing from it. I'm still glowing. Love is still in the air. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I feel that way, but I just read Don't Hate the Player by Alexis Ned.
Yep.
That might be my favorite romance for spring.
Okay.
I mean, the voice was so much fun, and I love video game based things, even though I'm not a gamer at all. Mm-hmm. I thought that one crushed it. That was an exciting one.
What's the reason there then? Why do you like video game based stories but don't actually play video games? Well, I'm not a gamer.
I love things
what's the
where
appeal?
People...
What's the appeal there for you?
I have very fond memories when I was a kid, like really little. So my siblings are much older.
Yep.
And I used to love watching like the big kids play video games.
Okay.
For me, it's something I actually loved doing as a spectator more than I loved doing it as an active participant.
Right on. Yep.
And I feel like I carried that with me kind of. Mm-hmm. So it's partly that it's a way to still have adventure in the book. Like, they really describe what's going on in the game while it's still a contemporary book, but it has that kind of adventure that fantasy has.
Yep.
And then I just love main characters who are passionately nerdy about something and nerdily passionate.
Yep.
And gamers kind of always have that.
For sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, I love it in a very different, more, you know, darkly intense way about books with protagonists who are ballet dancers.
Right.
In YA, I just find those books are always fantastic. They're always like girls full of drive and ambition in this great way. But I have no interest in ballet. But if ballet written by, you know, Brandi Colbert or Sona Charapotra and Danielle Clayton or Nova Rensuma, and I'm like, yes, yes, you are all nailing what I love to see.
How do you feel about sapphic coffee shop tropes? Do you feel...
I feel very positively.
I would think so. Cool for the summer.
Yes.
Have you started doing marketing for it yet? Did you?
I mean, it's out in less than a month.
Right.
I'm doing everything for it now.
Yeah. So, do you want me to read the summary, or do you want to, you know, keep fine tuning your what is this book about? Question answer.
Oh, it doesn't matter to me. That's whatever you like.
It's not a long one.
It's not long.
I don't like long summaries. I can't. I'm going to read it.
Okay.
Lara's had eyes for exactly one person throughout her 3 years of high school, Chase Harding. He's a good, he's a handsome boy. He's tall, strong, sweet, a football star, and frankly, stupid hot. Oh, and he's talking to her now on purpose and everything. Maybe flirting even? No, wait. He's definitely flirting, which is pretty much the sum of everything Lara's wanted out of life. Except she's haunted by a memory of a confusing, romantic, strangely perfect summer spent with a girl named Jasmine. A memory that becomes a confusing, disorientating present when Jasmine herself walks through the front doors of the school to see Lara and Chase chatting it up in front of the lockers. Lara has everything she ever wanted. A tight-knit group of friends, a job that borders on cool, and Chase, the boy of her literal dreams. But if she's finally got the guy, why can't she stop thinking about the girl? Mm. So, I mean, yeah, that's pretty much it. But
yeah,
what?
I don't think that's actually the final copy. I think we changed it again.
I'll check it out.
It's fine. I mean, it's all the same story.
It's basically the same idea, probably. What's the beating heart of this book? Because, I mean, that's... And we get these books that we get, you know, several versions of this story each year, right? So what, not this specific story, obviously.
Yeah, but, I mean, I like to think this one's
teenagers
a little different.
In love, right?
Yes, like, it's teenagers in love. This one has a lot more to do with self-discovery, but it's a little more nuanced on the self-discovery front in the sense of, I mean, Lara's dealing with growing up in a world of compulsory heterosexuality. It's not that she is like denying the fact that she's bi so much as she's trying to understand whether she is. It's, you know, not everybody grows up surrounded by like Tumblr terms. So she, you know, it's something she really just genuinely doesn't know about herself, and she doesn't understand what it means that she had these feelings for somebody, or that she has these feelings for somebody, because she's had this lifelong dream of this boy. And if you've achieved a lifelong dream, then why aren't you happy? And how could you possibly be thinking about somebody else? And if you know that you like boys, what does it mean if you have feelings for somebody who isn't a boy? So there's a lot of her grappling with that and trying to understand what her, like genuinely understand what her feelings mean. A lot of people kind of talk about the book as being heavily about miscommunication, but it is first and foremost, the miscommunication part is like Lara with herself. She doesn't she doesn't know how to claim a label, what to claim, how she feels, if it's just Jasmine, if that matters. The one thing she knows is she's always wanted Chase.
Right. One thing I was going to mention was this idea of labels, because, you know, she has a great conversation towards the end of the book about labels. You know what I mean? About, you know, let's just not call it anything. Let's just kiss. basically. Right. Let's just make out. And that's a really great way to put it too, because God, and just in real life terms, I mean, we get so caught up in labels all the time, right? And it's important, you know, that people understand, of course, the right way to refer to somebody, you know, just out of respect, from a respect point of view. But as far as we're talking about just how somebody views themselves, and like you said, and trying to sort of communicate with their own self, and labels can confuse that sometimes, right? So it's, I think maybe your point is, especially with Lara at the end, is, you know, just open yourself up and see what happens, and then whatever you want to call it whatever you want.
I see it as she ultimately will claim one, but that's
sure.
I think it is common for bi people to struggle to claim it. she will claim being bi. I feel comfortable saying she will claim being bi at some point in life.
Right.
But right now, and this is a conversation that comes up in the book too, the examples she's seen of bisexuality are people who've always known. Right. And she struggles with the fact that she is not a person who's always known. So does she get to claim this label?
Right.
And, you know, parts of that conversation are implicit and parts are explicit. Mm-hmm. But that's why she doesn't at the time. It's something a lot of people struggle with who fall somewhere under the bi umbrella. They don't know, you know, they don't feel valid in claiming it. And she is much more, you know, she validates it for everybody else, but she doesn't know how to validate it for herself. And I think that that's something that's pretty common when, especially when people are very new to being somewhere under the rainbow.
Yeah.
You know, and not wanting to kind of take up that space. So that's where I see her.
Right. And it's also it's a crazy time in her life, just besides all of that. I mean, senior year, you know, like there's a lot going on and all of a sudden it's her world is turned upside down by Jasmine, who I got to say, you know, you write so beautifully.
Thank you.
You know, it's I don't know how anyone could not fall in love with Jasmine the way you present her from cover to cover too, right? It's not just like this you know, this idol worship situation too, right? I mean, you give us all sides. All your characters are very three-dimensional, and Jasmine.
Thank you.
Jasmine in particular, I think is very three-dimensional. Like it's especially when you get towards the end of the book, and she's, you know, starts to things have built up, you know. Yeah. they build and build and build, and you know, you have these wonderful scenes, you know, where the truth, I guess, finally is the miscommunication is no longer miscommunication.
Yeah.
it's direct communication, and things get, you know, laid out in very certain terms. One of the great things I loved about the way that you did this, you don't do time jumping, you do flashbacks basically, right?
They're
triggers. So you titled then THEN, you mm-hmm. sort of chapter the titles. I thought that was genius the way you did it.
Thank you.
And it's just, you always seem to pick the right time, not right time for the reader, not for Lara necessarily to experience these flashbacks, these then moments. What was the idea? Was that there from the beginning or?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is actually probably the most common question I get about the book, which is interesting. And I have never written a dual timeline. So it's probably a more common question than I knew. But it was always that way. And the way that I see it is each one of those moments that triggers a then is really a mental trigger for Lara. Like, I don't think that this works as a linear story, because I don't think she could have come to a point of understanding. I mean, she doesn't come to a point of understanding from getting from point A through point B. Like, she keeps needing to revisit the summer to understand the moments that happened differently, both how they're affecting how she's feeling in the present, like, why am I not more into this?
Mm-hmm.
But also to understand how she was supposed to be reading these moments with Jasmine. You know, she was trying so hard not to think about them that she didn't think about them.
Right.
And now she's putting them in the new context of, if I start comparing it to what it looks like when I'm actually in a romance with somebody and I hit these different kind of checkpoints in my relationship with Chase, and they, you know, and then they remind her of things that happened over the summer, and she has to look back at that and back at her own feelings in a different light, in a way that I think could only be triggered by her sort of achieving this dream now. I don't think she ever could have come to the point of realizing her feelings for Jasmine if she didn't get Chase. I don't think she ever would have gotten there without
Right. She needs that compare contrast sort of thing, right? To get that clarity. It's an incredibly practical way to tell the story as well, because I mean, if you had lumped all the summer stuff at the beginning, you know, as a reader, I don't retain very much. So I would have forgotten it all by the end. Right. I'd be like, what is she talking about? What Demi Lovato song? speaking of which,
there's one on the cover.
They're the one on the cover. Yeah. Speaking of which, there's a scene. The one I love, the second act of this book is incredible.
Thank you.
There's the party scene, and I compared it to like there's so much like Greek tragedy in this book. It's just like crazy to me. That whole party is basically, it's Orpheus basically to me. Like that's what it feels like to me. And there's a really,
I feel so classy now.
I get a little squeamish about intimacy sometimes, and there's an intimate scene at the party.
Yeah,
and it was hard to read for me. I don't know. We can start to talk about it without spoilers, so we won't. But I don't know. It was hard for me to read. I think a lot of it too was because it turned to end up being sort of a spectator thing, like with his buddies on the outside of the room causing problems, and it was crushing to me for her because it was just everything that it shouldn't have been.
Kind of a yes and no.
Yeah, like it, I don't know. It's like at that point, I'm so, you know, I'm so in love with not only her, but her and Jasmine. It's just like, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's just like, no, don't do that.
Right. And the more spectators there are to her relationship with Chase, the more real that becomes. I mean, I wanted him to feel like a real option. I don't like these, you know, love triangles where you're like, one person's obviously got to go. Like, it's easy to see which one we're going to flick off. Like, you know which one's going to be the ultimate love interest because you know what this book is about, but I don't want that to be an easy choice. But the thing about it being a spectator sport, you know, it was yes and no on the discomfort for Laura, because obviously, you know, as a
no, I'm talking about for me.
Oh, for you.
No, my discomfort.
Oh, it sounded like you had some sympathy for her too.
No. I mean, I do in the sense of just, you know, the way I personally, you know, treat women with a level of respect and, you know, it, you know, there should be candles and romance and you know, gross male body parts and things like that, things of that nature. But I'm talking about my uncomfortability with it. I have a clear picture in my head of what I want. And then it's, you know, then you have this scene, which was, you know, this isn't to you. It's written very well. And reads too good in a way, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Right.
And you know, that's sort of, you exit that scene and go downstairs and then have like your, you know, like your Hades moment.
Yeah.
You know, with the
serenade.
Right. Like, and that whole scene, it just feels like it's an incredibly long scene, but it reads really quick. It felt like an anchor. I have a question. It felt like an anchor.
Yeah.
Yes. So talk to me about that, because it feels like an anchor for me.
So that intimate scene, which I won't dwell on too much, it was really a culmination for her. It's the spectator aspect of it is actually an important part of it, because it feeds into Laura's realization that maybe her feelings for Chase aren't entirely about the person so much as the status and the experience.
Yep.
And she's not as bothered by the spectator thing. I mean, also because I think Chase handles it reasonably well, sort of in the way that we would hope, you know, our dream teen boys would or whatever. But, you know, for her, part of it was being on his arm and being viewed as like Chase's girl. And like, it was really, that scene embodies all that happening. And, you know, so it's really kind of a culmination of her getting everything she wants. It's super high. Like, all these things are really high on her list of things that she had dreamed. And then she goes downstairs and, you know, this event happens. She's, you know, it's what it is for anybody who hasn't read it is, you know, Jasmine's singing a karaoke song, and the song has a lot of meaning for her and Laura, but it is not positive meaning in this context.
Right.
But so they're not even having a moment together. It's like they're having a moment past each other,
mm-hmm.
or kind of a negative moment. And it's still, Laura realizes, more meaningful to her and more special to her and, you know, claws at her more than everything that just happened, more than the culmination of her dream just happened upstairs. So that point for her is where it really dawns on her that they are vying for the same space in her heart, and the person she wants to be winning is not.
I do want to say, Chase, there's no villains in this book. Chase is a good, I do want to say that. Yeah. Chase is a good guy.
Yeah.
It's not like he is ultimately, like he really is a good, like he, you know.
It hurt to make him a good guy.
Yeah, he is a good guy.
I felt that was really important.
If I've made it sound like he's not a good guy,
No.
I would attract that. He is a good guy. You know, he's just late. He's late to the game. It's too late.
Yes.
He missed his chance. He should have came in before the summer.
Yeah.
One of the great things too, I liked about this book was the Laura's relationship with her mother. I always love, you know, these scenes in books where, you know, boys and girls, you know, have to sort of come out to their parents, and it's always the mother that always, she knew all, they knew all along, right? They're much more intuitive than we give them credit for sometimes, I think. And, you know, there's a beautiful, beautiful scene at the end with her mom, you know, the morning after type of scene. And what was it, you know, what was inspiration behind the parents in this book? Because all the parents in this book are seemingly great.
Yeah, I don't like writing evil parents. It's, you know, evil parents is not my personal experience. There are a lot of people who do have that experience and they write it really well, and I think that's really necessary and cathartic for kids who had that and need to read that too. But I am not the author for evil parents. That said, I am not out to my parents. Okay. So this was a wish fulfillment scene for me.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough.
And that's honestly like the greatest inspiration for it.
Right.
Which is, you know, sort of a funny thing to say, but it is how I wish it would go in theory. You know, it's not, I knew all along. It's, you know, even with the coming out scene, it's her mom, like, pieces of the past click together for her.
Sure. She recognized happiness, but maybe exactly what that happiness was.
But didn't
was.
Know how to interpret it until now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want it to be like, Lara hasn't been giving off vibes. The vibes aren't there. She hasn't had feelings for another girl. She's not, she hasn't been repressing. There just wasn't another one who, you know, triggered her sexual attraction until now, or romantic attraction. So, you know, it's as positive as it can be without, I knew this about you all along, which would have been disingenuous. And honestly, also is just not the right way to respond to somebody's coming out to you ever. But I felt like it was the good, realistic balance. And yeah, so that's what it is. That's my wish fulfillment coming out scene that I still can't read without crying.
Okay. Understood. I wrote it down. I brought it up because it stuck with me too. It's a beautiful scene. And
that's my favorite scene in the book.
And, you know, and then just beautiful touches like, you know, the pickled cucumber line you know, just
I went to Russian minor in college.
You know, just the beautiful touch of her just, you know, before she leaves the room, throwing that one last thing out there and that just beautiful, Dahlia. Like I said, I wrote it down because it was one of the scenes that really jumped out to me, is really beautiful, not even knowing, you know, your background. So there you go. I hope wish fulfillment becomes reality for you.
Thank you. Someday.
Yeah. I wouldn't.
We'll see.
I wouldn't pretend to understand what that's, you know, what that must feel like. So I wish you nothing but
thank you.
Well, good luck there.
Thanks.
I don't know. Sorry.
It's, you know.
It's fine. It's, right. Every story needs a hero. Jasmine is the hero of Lara's story, as far as I'm concerned. I think she, you know, she's got stuff, you know, of her own too, but, you know, I guess maybe, I don't know, would you view it as they save each other? I don't know. You know, what I wrote down was, you know, she saves Lara from a life of arm candy and triviality.
You know, I think without Jasmine, Lara, in theory, would have been fine with Chase, but I think Jasmine helped Lara become the person that Chase found attractive. Like, everyone's like, oh, I, you know, people don't understand this sudden attraction of Chase to Lara. Like, where'd this come from? But she came back, you know, vibing like a different person. So, I mean, clearly there's more I could have done to make it more believable that he would suddenly be into her. But like in my experience, especially as a teenager, it really doesn't take much to look at somebody in a new light, you know?
Absolutely not. And I had no problems with that part of the book. There wasn't any disconnect there for me at all. And I don't remember the line, but you literally explain it. Right.
Yes, thank you. I also feel like I literally explain it.
Like he literally explains it to her why all of a sudden. Like, so I don't understand the confusion there. But
I mean, look, if it's not, there's always going to be people. It's not a wrong reading. It's a different, you know, that's not necessarily satisfying for you. You know, you needed more show than tell from me. That's fine. I don't begrudge anybody feeling differently. But yes, the way I explain it is literally there on the page.
Sure.
I think neither Lara nor Jasmine like needed saving, but they definitely.
Saving's the wrong word, I guess. Maybe,
I would say that they gave each other sort of a better version of life that neither one knew was attainable.
Right.
You know, like both would have kind of gone on being sad about something in life without knowing why. Like Jasmine would have gone on with that loneliness that she talks about without feeling like anybody's like real complete number one. And Laura would have, you know, wondered like, there's no depth to my relationship with Chase here. Like it's really nice, but he is not bringing out anything more in me and anything about who I want to be, which is, you know, what Jasmine does for her. So I think they give each other a life that wouldn't have been possible without the other one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they're more of a bonus than a, you know, needed this to go on kind of
right.
thing.
Sure. Yeah. This book is nothing, but if it's nothing, there's no short of cinematic moments, I think. And, you know, there's a really
hear that Netflix.
Oh, I mean, like the coffee shop scene at the end, you know, with the signing and stuff like that, the book signing and, you know, these are just, it seemed like, you know, sure. They might seem simple to, you know, piece together and write, but they're not, are they? Because I mean, it has to meet the moment, right? It's built up. You've built this whole thing up to this moment. It has to meet that moment in such a big, important way. Did you labor over that part at all? Was that scene written early? I mean, there's people that write backwards, right? That write would that scene first.
I do often write scenes out of order. I didn't do that much with Cool for the Summer.
Okay.
Partly because that's very hard to do if you're already writing a dual timeline.
Right.
Because you really want to make sure, you know, I want those scenes to link really nicely. And that's harder to ensure if you're going out of order. But I did go back. I think once I saw how I wanted it to end, I did go back and do more with Laura wanting to be an author, with being an aspiring author, being a big part of Laura's personality and her love of romance novels. So that was more, I'd say most of my revision for this book went into earning various parts of the ending.
Right.
So it was really bolstering her friendships more and bolstering these elements of her personality more. And things like that are more the stuff I went back to do. But by the time I wrote the ending, like the ending was like easy and so much fun to write. I've spent so much time in bookstores at events. It was such a pleasure to be able to write one.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm going to end up setting way too many books partially in bookstores and with a lot of bookstore employees, because I honestly just love writing that so much.
Yeah, well, it's a really great spot. And you know, there's that, like I said, the whole scene unfolds in such a great way. And, you know, when she gets to ask her question to the author that's there, it's really, really a nice moment. And you feel it coming. I've reread that scene probably 100 times. I'm not even joking. Just that part, right? Because I think it's so okay. Well done.
Well, the experience of that scene, which is where Laura asks a question relating to the fact that the romance novel that she's writing seems to be panning toward the wrong love interest, was my experience of writing my first queer YA, Under the Lights.
Okay.
I mean, that was the key to my figuring out everything. So to be able to put that in the ending to my novel was like amazing.
That's great. Adds more weight to it now too, for me anyways. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So originally, I mean, the main character, that was not written to be a queer romance at all. Mm. And then I, you know, just was really frustrated that the romance was not working. And I said to my critique partner, like, I just want to make her a lesbian. And then I was like, Oh my God. And I went back and looked at the book and I stripped out the romance. And the only person that the main character had ever had chemistry with was this waitress.
Amazing.
I was like, she has been one the whole time. And I didn't realize. And I rewrote that entire book. And then that was the beginning for me, like literally my own personal journey.
Wow.
And then, so now I got to echo that in Cool for the Summer. And I don't know how many people have picked up on that who've also read Under the Lights, but for me, it's very cool to be able to echo that.
Oh, that's really great. I fucking love that. That's super cool. Wow. Thanks for telling me that. That's really great. Sure. That's going to really just like when I read, I'll be rereading it again. So I'll just be like, that's Dahlia. I've read a lot of books where, you know, and you have too, I'm sure, where, you know, the best friends come around at the end and sometimes they don't come around at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say what her best friends do, but she has a tight knit group, right? There's the three, mm-hmm. she's got three best friends and, you know, they're really all great. They're a great crew, right? They're all unique.
Yeah.
They're all unique, special in their own ways, but they seem to work together really well too. And that's important, right? For a girl in high school, you know, to have that close-knit group, and then for them to either, you know, the difficulty of trying to express to them what you're feeling, how you're feeling, what you're going through, and without being able to say, oh, it's this or I'm that.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, in an environment that is like, you know, cishet, on steroids. That's a tricky, you know, thing to maneuver. If you can talk about sort of that relationship with her friends without spoiling anything, because it gets tricky, right? When she's trying to navigate those waters, right?
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, I happen to have gotten a lot of agent offers on this manuscript. So I got to have a lot of different conversations about the book.
Yeah.
And some of them who I knew immediately were not the right agents for me were like, it's so nice that like homophobia, like she doesn't worry about that in the slightest in this book. And I'm like, I think you are misreading it.
Yeah.
She doesn't think anybody is going to like kick her out of the house or, you know, turn their back on her, never talk to her again. But there are degrees of what it looks like. And some of it is not even necessarily about your sexuality, but about the people closest to you learning that you are not exactly who they thought they were and how they take that. And do they think then that you're a liar? Do they think you've been dishonest? Do they worry that you've had feelings for them or been checking them out and they don't know? And there's a lot of complications to telling people who've known you for a long time this new fundamental fact about yourself that other people don't necessarily understand is something you haven't known forever. You know, and in some cases people have known forever, but they don't know how to talk about it or don't feel safe talking about it. I mean, but it happens to be Laura's situation where she genuinely didn't know. She wasn't keeping something from her friends, but that doesn't stop the concern of how are they going to react to this new piece of information about me that I'm sure it seems like, you know, I held back and what does it mean for how they're going to look at me and have understood the things I said? And if somebody doesn't really understand bisexuality, and I mean, still coming up against plenty of people who don't, is that going to make them think she was always lying about her feelings for Chase? If you, you know, do any of them actually secretly believe it's just like a step on the way to gay town and she's been making up this thing her whole life? And so she has, you know, more, there's a billion little things to worry about when you come out, even to people that you feel safe with.
There's a fear too, right? Because when you're that tight with a group like that, and it's like it's almost like you don't want to, you know, upset the herd in a way.
Yeah,
right? Like it's
be fine, but if it shakes everything, then it's, you know, then something's off.
And a fear of, you know, maybe they're steep down, they feel like they're going to lose their best friend because of it, or you know,
it's, yeah,
or you, the, or this dynamic of going to football games or what, you know, whatever it happens.
It feels
to be,
like it changes life.
Yeah. Yeah. Which has been pretty good.
Yeah.
Right?
So if it's pretty good and it's going to change, is it going to change in a way that is okay with them? Is it going to change in a way that's going to make them distance themselves from her? Are they going to be in a way that makes her need to distance from them? I mean, there are a lot of little concerns that aren't all, you know, violence.
Right.
So I put it on another panel when we discussed this as for her, things are safe, but not simple. Mm-hmm. She's not worried about danger. She's worried about the thousand little pinpricks that could upend her life in a different way. So that's what it is for her with her friends.
Yeah. I think how you handle the friends part is really, really well done. And I think again, not saying how it goes, because you know, it can go one of two ways. And I've read plenty of stories where it does go bad and you know, they end up losing friendships over it. And then I've read plenty of stories where the friends come around and be like, well, let's just hang out. really quickly before I move on to sort of what you got going next, one of the things, and you talked about it too, and it's fine. Doesn't upset me, but the comparison to Greece, you know, I think is sort of both obvious and I think it's a little unnecessary. I think it sort of, you know, I wrote, it placates perhaps a mass market with a comparable Greek mythological structure, but in my opinion, lacks the real world aesthetic that Cool for the Summer provides. One is an on the nose fantasy with a goddamn flying chariot. One is not.
Are you talking about Greece, the movie?
Yes.
Here's the thing about Greece.
Yeah.
And I just admitted this on a book club, at a book club meeting last night. It's not inspired by Greece.
Okay.
At all. I saw Greece once and I hated it.
Okay, good.
I'm going to be too. Perfectly
yeah,
honest
yeah, me
about
too.
That.
No, I'm with yeah. you. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not saying you compared it to Greece, but
I totally have because from a, no, so what happened is, so I wrote this book and it was, you know, inspired by various things. And every time I told somebody about it, the response was, oh, like Greece. Oh,
okay.
And I got that so many times and in kind of a joyful way that it started to be how I narrowed down the book when I had to do it in like, you know, four word
pitch. Give
me
the elevator.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
Give me the elevator pitch. And it's not even my preferred elevator pitch, to be honest, but it works in speaking rather than writing.
Right.
Better than my elevator pitch does.
Understood.
But it's, so many people got excited by that when I like,
really?
Put that out there. So there are people who really love Greece. And frankly, like Only Mostly Devastated by Sophie Gonzalez is YA Greece. And I think that that's a great book too.
Right.
So, you know, just because something is off really problematic, unfortunate source material, you know, and my experience editing the anthologies that I have is that retelling is a great way to kind of course correct really problematic source material.
Sure. Right.
So I sometimes am extra interested in retellings if they're based on works I didn't like.
Which I'm all for this. There's this like sort of recent trend of, you know, revisionist Disney stuff. And I'm all for, I'm like 1,000% behind it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm
there's all a lot of cool stuff coming. That's reimagining classics in a much more, inclusive and cool and nuanced way that I really love. But so that's the thing about Greece.
Okay.
So it's been in and out as how I describe it, because there are people for whom that's sort of the easiest way to condense the plot.
Right.
But I call it, like, I was very specific about buy YA Greece with better life choices. Like, I just, I want to distance it from the things I hate about Greece as much
Great.
As possible.
Which I want to too, which is why I wrote it. Why I wrote that. Yeah. So, all right. So we're on the same page. Yeah. That's good.
Yes.
That's
good. We are.
All right. So speaking of anthologies, At the Stroke of Midnight.
Yeah.
This author list is obviously insane. You have Hafsa Faisal, who is, I have such a huge crush on her. she can do no wrong. Talk to me about what's At the Stroke of Midnight all about.
So At the Stroke of Midnight is my third anthology of reimaginings. And this one is fairy tale retelling. So this was actually conceived through texting with Anna Marie McLemore, and it was their idea, which is why they are in it again, despite having been in That Way Madness Lies and my usually being determined not to contract the same author twice, because I like to give, you know, different authors new opportunities.
I just watched a great panel with them and Kaylin Baron.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So the thing about making lineups for these anthologies is you want, for me, I like to have a mix of people who like really specialize in this. Mm-hmm. But if they're really, really well known for doing this, I often actually, I'm like, okay, they do it in their novels. I don't necessarily need to bring them into doing it short form.
Yep.
So I do need to say, I loved Cinderella is Dead, but I was like, okay.
This is something I wasn't saying you should have had Kaylin.
No,
on
I know, but it's funny that you mention her, because I like thought about it. And then I was like, no, she's literally crushing it in novels like right now.
This Poison Heart is probably going to end up being my favorite book this year.
Oh, I'm so excited for it.
It is so great. Yeah.
Yeah. But so like, I wanted more authors who are doing fairy tale like books.
Yep.
As opposed to straight up retellings of fairy tales. So that was my aim. So Melissa Albert, actually, we didn't want to like get into it in the announcement, but he's doing an original fairy tale for it.
Oh, cool.
Because writing original fairy tales is kind of what she does.
Right.
And then, yeah, we have, God, I wish I had the whole like.
I will read it to you. You ready? No, Melissa Albert.
It's changed a lot.
Okay, well, if this is wrong, then you correct me. So you've got Melissa Albert, Tracy Dion, Hafsa Faisal, Bridget Kemmerer, Stacey Lee, Roselle Lim, Darcy Little Badger, Melinda Lowe, Alex London, Anna Marie McLemore, Rebecca Potos, Rory Power, Meredith Russo, and Gita Trelease.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Yes. As I know, this is staying. So one thing that I really love about this lineup is it's people who have worked in very different mythologies and different areas of the world as inspiration for their work.
Right.
So like Gita Trelease, for example, is she herself is Indian and she has written French fantasy. So that's cool. Melinda Lowe is like, how do you not ask the person who wrote Ash? Rebecca Potos has done like Russian Fabulism and Anna Marie McLemore, you know, has worked with European fairy tale, but she always brings Latinx representation to the work. Alex London was like, let's get somebody writing gay Cinderella. And actually that's whose story I'm reading right now. And it's fantastic.
Perfect. Awesome.
Yeah. Tracy Dion brought so much, like, oh my God, the brilliance of Legendborn.
Yep.
And taking Arthuriana and the Black American experience is just like, oh my God, the brilliance with which she did that is unreal.
Yep.
I actually invited her before I even read Legendborn because I love that. Just the cover and people's reactions to it were like, oh my God, you're just going to want her. And it just like was before I could get my hands on the book. I was like, I just know I'm going to want it. And then I read Legendborn. And now it's one of my favorite YA fantasies of all time. So good choice by me. I feel good about that. Yes. So it's
kudos to the cover design and artist then.
John Contino. to that. Yes. I don't know who designed that cover. Yeah. But yes, my cover designer for these anthologies is John Contino, and he's amazing. He's the cover artist. He like draws and hand letters and oh my God, his stuff's amazing. Yeah, so I'm really excited about it. And it's, you know, for the most part, the traditional fairy tales that you know, Hansel and Gretel and Cinderella and Snow White and et cetera. I tried to get as many of the like really basic ones as I could. There's some people who are writing slightly more offbeat tales.
Sure.
And there's, the rule is in all of my anthologies, the rules are, they don't have to stick to a certain genre. So you're going to see ones that are contemporary and ones that are fantasy. And I don't know if anybody's doing sci-fi, but I really like to see what people do with it. Mm-hmm. And they certainly do not have to be Western interpretations,
right,
or they didn't have to be Western fairy tales. I think in the end, everybody chose Western works. But they do not have to be the Western takes on works. So I'm really excited to see how everything comes out. So far I just have the one story in, but I heard from three authors just recently. So I know I will have more coming soon and they're not due for another couple months, but I'm just so excited to see how this comes out. I mean, I love the way my last two anthologies have come out. So I feel good about my author choices.
That's amazing. It's a great list. I can't, you know, and just to snag them too, because they're all very busy authors as well.
Yes.
So that part is
tricky.
Yeah. Especially if this holds up Legendborn 2, then I'm blaming you.
That's why you get in on the ground floor. Like, I knew she was not going to stay free. If I asked her like 3 months later, she would have been like, no, go away. Yeah. She's lovely. She's a wonderful person. She would never do that. But she would not have had the time. So I try to like, I like to think I have an eye for who's going to blow up, and then I get them before that happens.
Perfect. It's so funny. I've been, you know, I used to be like solely a Star Wars blogger, and, you know, with Looking for Leia, her work with Looking for Leia, and then her Star Wars anthology work, I've just been, you know, known about Tracy for a couple of years now. And
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's really exciting when Legendborn came out, and it was so, obviously it's so great. And just to see her blow up the way she has, and it's just been really, really, really cool. And you need to learn more about her, and, you know, it was for her mother and all this great stuff. But it's so great. So great. I love it. It's so amazing when like good things happen to good people. Right. So, all right. By the time this airs, Cool for the Summer will be out. I'm not a fan of pandemic profiteering myself. Do you, other than, you know, bookshop, do you have any preferred places where folks got this book from? Any local shops?
There's a pre-order campaign.
Okay.
So I know by now, you know, if this is already out, I guess the boat has missed on that, but maybe they have some extra stickers and book plates. But, you know, obviously love to support the indies that are carrying it, which is One More Page, which is also the one hosting my launch. That one's in the DC area. East City Bookshop, also in the DC area. They did a phenomenal event for me where they had me do a His Hideous Heart event in the Congressional Cemetery. It was hands down the coolest thing I have ever done.
That's cool.
So when they asked me, like, which indies do you want to work with? Like, that's, I picked these. So One More Page, East City Bookshop, Porter Square Books, which is in the Boston area, Brazos Bookstore in Houston, and The Ripped Bodice in LA, which is the greatest all romance bookstore in the history of the world.
Awesome. Okay. Yes,
any of those five would be amazing.
Perfect. And then if you're not anywhere, they probably do online too, right? I'm sure they all deliver.
Oh, yes. They all ship.
And
I mean, look, no judgment. And first of all, if you got it from a library, awesome. If you got it from Amazon, I am still not judging you.
No, you get it. Yeah. Ultimately, we want people just to get books in their hands however they can, right?
And exactly.
Some people are geographically challenged and or, you know, financially.
But I will throw out there, because I think people don't realize that Target, I think, generally price matches Amazon. Awesome. On books. So if they happen to be carrying a book, they're not always carrying everything, but they are carrying Cool for the Summer. So I think if, you know, it's a price thing, I would, you know, Target. and BNN.
Yes, all the good. Yeah, no, there are good places for sure. But
both of them, you know, they all have it for less than list price now, is why I mentioned them.
Perfect.
So they might still by then.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Plenty of options.
Yes.
Dahlia, I can't thank you enough. I want to let you go before, I think you called it the tornado comes home. I believe you referred to your child as a tornado.
I'm not wrong. I make no apologies for how I describe my toddler.
And I'm not even judging. I don't have kids, but I'm surrounded by them. So I understand.
Yeah.
I can't thank you enough for doing this. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
I've loved this book. You know that. And I can't wait for the release, because everyone's going to love it. And you know, despite everything else, the doom and gloom and everything else going on in the world, I think, it feels like to me, you're a true believer. And I think we still need, you know, either way, I think it's nice to know that these types of stories are still coming out. You know what I mean? And because once in a while, I think we need a good shot of love to help us get through all that.
It's a good year for it. There's a lot of them.
I think so, too. So, all right, Dahlia, thank you so much. And
thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good. Have a great day.
There you have it, another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Dahlia for taking the time to speak with me. She's very, very, very busy, so I appreciate her setting aside some time on her schedule for me. I read Cool for the Summer at just the right time, and it left me smiling for days. I know you'll feel the same way once you read it. It's out now, so head on over to DahliaAdler.com to get your hands on a copy today. As a reminder, it is still Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, so support AAPI authors all month long, even all year long. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to CineLinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.